You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith.
I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is Season 5, Episode 2. Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to Feathers This Week. I'm so glad to have you here. This week, I am so excited to have Jen Bricker with us. Jen is an author, aerialist, and motivational speaker. She's a state champion in power tumbling. She has traveled internationally with Britney Spears' circus tour and appeared as a headliner in Las Vegas, New York, Dubai, and Tokyo. She's been featured on numerous news shows, including HBO's Real Sports, ABC's 2020, Good Morning America, and ESPN's Versus. She's currently living in LA and has added a successful international speaking career to her list of accomplishments, including a TEDx talk. She has a new book out called Everything is Possible, and you will see why she has been featured in so many places. Her story is just quite miraculous, really, and her attitude towards life is so inspiring. I felt like she was the perfect person to talk to us about doing the hard things in life, especially when we have to put ourselves out there and we don't feel equipped to do the things that God has called us to do. Jen says, don't even put the word can't into your vocabulary, and that all things are possible for the person who believes. I am so honored to have Jen on the podcast today. So let's go ahead and jump into my conversation with Jen Bricker. Well, hey, Jen, and welcome to Feathers today.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I am super excited to talk to you. I have just read your new book, Everything is Possible, and that you have out, and just so inspired by you and your story and excited to share that with my listeners today.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So I would love for you to just start out and tell us a little bit about yourself. And actually, your story really starts with an adoption story.
Yeah, it really does. I actually, you know, I think one of the most powerful parts of my story starts before I ever came into the picture. And you know, it's with my parents and the whole adoption story. Like you said, my mom had three boys, and after she had my last brother, she couldn't have kids anymore. She had to have a hysterectomy, and she always wanted a baby girl. She just prayed and prayed for 10 years. She never gave up after her hysterectomy. She always felt like there was supposed to be four kids. She just like, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like I'm supposed to have four. And she always wanted a girl. And so one day she heard about a girl born without legs who was put up for adoption and needed a home. And it was like a light bulb just went off. And she said, oh, my gosh, that's her. It's got to be her. And she talked to my brothers and my dad. And it was really beautiful. They tell me, of course, about this, but that they sat my brothers all down individually, and they were only 10, 12, and 14 years old at this time, mind you. And I think this is so special. They sat them all down and they said, you know, how would you all feel about having a sister without legs? You know, what would that mean to you? If you had friends come over, or, you know, the oldest one would be dating in a couple years, and, you know, what if your girlfriend came over and thought, oh, I don't know, you know, it's weird, your sister doesn't have legs, or whatever. And they all three individually said the same thing. They said, well, if they have a problem with her, then I don't want them in my life anyway.
That's strong.
And right? Especially for that age. That's so touching to me. And so they adopted me, and it was a miracle after a miracle. My parents were the least likely candidates. I mean, they had never adopted or even fostered, and knew nothing about the adoption world and knew nothing about, you know, somebody born without legs. I mean, and my dad was 42. My mom was 39. They already had three boys. I mean, pretty much everything was working against them, middle of nowhere. And, but they got me. They got me in record time. And as a gift to my brothers, they actually let my brothers pick my name. And so they said that it was a really funny scene, because the rule was they all three had to agree on one name. So they're all sitting around. Oh,
boy.
Yeah.
Agreeing.
You can imagine they're all sitting around throwing out these names, and oh, what about this one? No, I know someone with that name and I don't like her, and blah, 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 blah. And they're just totally going back and forth. And so that's how I came with the name Jen, because my name in the foster home for the first 3 months was Holly Ann, actually. And so I got renamed when I came into the Bricker family, and they just raised me. You know, the first set of doctors said that I would never even be able to sit up on my own. And this was a team of doctors at a large hospital. And I would be confined into this device, like a, they called it like a bucket device that I would be stuck down into that was going to hold me upright, because they totally thought I would never even be able to do anything on my own. And my parents just couldn't take that. They couldn't believe that. There's no way, no way. So then they took me to the Shriners Hospital. And my dad says, listen, I just want to know before we get any further, is she going to be able to sit up on her own? So that's it. That's all I want to know. And the doctor looked at him with all the confidence in the world and just said, Mr. Bricker, she's going to do things that are beyond your wildest imagination. Oh, she's going to do things that you would never believe possible. And that it was it. Exactly. I mean, my parents already had that mindset, but then after hearing that, it just drilled it home. And that was the whole, that was the beginning of a life where they didn't just tell me that I could do anything, but they showed me that I could do anything. And when I came to them and said, I want to play basketball, softball, volleyball, even power tumbling, and even roller skating, all against able-bodied athletes, no prosthetics, no wheelchair, and they never one time discouraged me. So they could have easily said, oh, you can do anything, don't use can't, all of these things. But then if they were just words without actions, that would have been completely empty. But they backed it up with their actions, and that was powerful.
Right. That is so incredible. I just love your perspective of this. In your book, it's you say, God gave me this gift for a reason. And yes, I said gift. I don't see myself as disabled or handicapped or lacking in any way, shape, or form. I am grateful for my body every day. I just think that's such an incredible perspective. So talk about some of the things you have done and what that, how that kind of played into how your life progressed, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really truly have never seen myself as disabled. That's the thing. It's almost like I'm having to tell people that, you know, it's almost like one of the biggest challenges is just telling people or getting people to understand that that is actually a true statement. And I think it's hard for people to understand because every single one of us have things that we don't like about ourselves. And I'm no different. It just happens to be that having no legs just wasn't really something. It wasn't really one of them. I had plenty of other things that I was hung up on. But I also understood that God made me this way. I mean, I really, and again, that can sound so cliche and so cheesy, but my parents, it was, again, it was backing it up with the, so it's more than just saying, anyone can say, oh, God made you this way for a reason, babe, you know, you're special. But again, that's just weak when there's nothing to back that up. And my parents backed that up by every single thing I said I wanted to do. They're like, okay, great, you're going to do it. And not only are you going to do it, but you're going to be awesome at it because you have an amazing head on your shoulders and you're determined and you're going to get it done, girl. Like, I've always just had that strong personality, and they didn't just tolerate that. They encouraged and celebrated that and, you know, didn't make me feel fragile or too afraid of things. They didn't coddle me too much. They talked to me like a person, not like a baby, you know. And there was just that strength, that constant strength and love and encouragement where, you know, really what that translated into is they gave me the freedom to have my own mind. So I was confident to make my own decisions. I was confident in my own judgment. And that's huge. I mean, that has translated into every aspect of my adult life because, you know, I was 19 years old. I got an opportunity to move to Disney World to do an internship in Orlando, 15 hours away from home. I didn't even think twice about it. I was like, bye, like gone, you know, and I was going, you know, and then I came to a huge decision where I had to choose. I was going into fashion. I mean, that's the track I was on. It was college fashion. That's what I wanted to do. Then I came into a crossroads the first year I was in Orlando to start this performing path as an acrobat and an aerialist or continue school. And without that confidence of making my own decision, that was a huge decision for me. And I chose to take the route performing because that opportunity is not always there. I could always go back to school. It's not going anywhere. And, you know, gave me the confidence. And that was clearly the path that was meant for me.
It's pretty incredible. I love how you talk about this, is that that you aren't used in spite of not having legs, but because of it, that it's, that's your unique thing that God is using.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, God gave me, I guess it's like, I realize now that it's not necessarily a normal thing to have. I've kind of understood this stuff from a very young age, and it's not that normal, but it was necessary. And I get it now. Like, okay, I had to have this perspective in order to understand things from an early age, so that my mind just wasn't even there. You know, I needed to be in the middle of nowhere in this community to be raised, so that, you know, thankfully bullying wasn't a part of my story. It's just not a part of my life. I was, you know, in school, just hanging out with everybody, very social, very popular, all of that. And that was purposeful. You know, God is purposeful, and he did it for a reason. I needed to have that sort of bubble to grow up in, if you will, in order to have, like, the confidence and the mindset that I have now, so that I can do and handle all of the challenges now that have come with adult life, with being in the entertainment industry, with traveling the world, with living in LA. All, like, I didn't make it easy on myself, you know, but I needed that childhood and that place of growing up in order to, you know, fulfill the things that God had planned now.
Wow. So let's go ahead and walk through that. It's kind of your story of where things started. Let's really concentrate, like, I guess, on your gymnastics and how that has played, because you talk about that you're aerialist now. So let's talk really about how that started. It's pretty incredible that you started gymnastics at such a young age.
Yeah. So we specifically had, it's called power tumbling in where I'm from, because it's such a small area. We actually didn't have gymnastics. And in the Midwest, power tumbling is just huge. And so what that is, in gymnastics, you have four events. Well, and one of the events is the big square floor where people tumble and do backflips and twists and things like that. So power tumbling, instead of a square floor, it's a long, like a runway type floor, but, you know, thick and blue, and there's a, mm-hmm. yeah, a white line down the middle. So, and you just tumble. You have two different passes, and you do flips and twists and back handsprings and all of that. So that's what I competed in for 4 years. I started in second grade, and, you know, my coaches were amazing. Of course, they had never coached somebody without legs, but they took it like a champ, didn't give me any exceptions, and were just very encouraging and helped me grow in that and not be too hard on myself, actually. And so, and then they saw that I actually had talent, and I started competing, and I competed for 4 years. And, you know, won a state championship 1 year in my division and went to nationals and AAU Junior Olympics, and which is the Amateur Athletic Union, all against able-bodied athletes, of course. And it was just incredible. You know, I loved gymnastics since I was a kid. I remember watching Dominique Moceanu when I was about 8 in the Olympics in 1996. And, you know, I knew we looked alike, and she was Romanian too, and of Romanian descent, and we just looked alike, and I thought, man, that's so cool. And then fast forward several years, right before I turned 16, I actually found out that she was my biological sister.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't imagine that moment. What does that feel like to find out somebody you had watched as a child turns out to be your biological sister?
I mean, on one hand, it's completely everything you think. I mean, outrageous. Holy crap. What do you mean? This is crazy. Who does this happen to? This is wild. You know, all of those things. And then immediately I wanted to meet her. You know, I wanted her to know I existed. And I saw on her website that she had a younger sister. And so, you know, I had a younger sister, and she looked exactly like me. I mean, I had twin exactly like me. It was just absolutely insane. And so I was like even more motivated, you know, and I was already very highly motivated to meet them. And so, but, you know, I think deep down somewhere, it kind of made sense. You know, I mean, okay, we're both Romanian. We both looked alike, which I picked up on as a kid and said out loud. And, you know, there was that draw. And but of course, the other emotions totally overshadowed any bit of like knowing. But I think deep down, it was like, yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Yeah. And that just started the basically the 4-year journey of contacting my sisters. And we all met in May of 2008. And it was surreal, but also natural. So you have essentially two strangers or strangers meeting from two different, totally different childhoods and upbringings. But yet our DNA bonds us, and, you know, we look alike and we sound alike, and we all like the same things. And so it's just, it was pretty powerful.
Wow. That's so incredible.
Yeah.
Well, so you've been able to meet, I think, your biological mom too, right?
Yes. Yep. So, my biological father had passed before I met him, but he had wanted to meet me, which I think, I don't know, for me, that's just really cool. And I guess that's enough, you know, it was cool to know that. And then I met my biological mother, Camelia, in 2010, 2 years after I met my sisters. And that was, I just remember it in slow motion is how I remember it. And it was, again, it was just kind of, it was kind of like really, really powerful and also just peaceful. And my sisters were all there. And then I think the coolest thing about that when I met her is that next day, my parents drove over from Illinois to Ohio, and all of us had dinner together. Me, my sisters, wow. My brother-in-law, my biological mom, her new husband, and my mom and dad. That was cool.
Yeah, I'm actually an adoptive mom myself. So just thinking about that, it's a little bit overwhelming for me.
Yeah.
But that's amazing that you were able to do that, and your parents are so supportive, and you guys were able to do that all together. Wow.
Yeah, they brought baby pictures and all these kind of pictures to show everybody, you know, just my childhood and stuff. And it was really cool for me.
That's incredible. So you have grown up, you've just have this, I guess, like take charge kind of attitude. You're going to do it. And I love that you talk about the word can't, like you just tell anybody, just don't even put that in your vocabulary. Right. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's more of a lifestyle. So, because when you're saying, you know, words have power, and I've really started to understand that as an adult, even more so. And, there's a lot of power. And so the minute you say you can't do something, you're going to believe it, and then you won't do it for sure. I mean, it's just the way we work. And so you're just stopping yourself. And that's, so, I mean, that's kind of the worst, right? When you're the one stopping yourself. So it's just that mindset of, if you eliminate that negativity, that I can't do this, I can't do that, then you're not going to do that. But if you start saying, I can do that, I will do that, I am going to do that, you're probably going to do it. It changes. Like, it's amazing how much power words have, because we just believe whatever we say, and then we make that our reality. And so I think if we can kind of start incorporating things every day, that makes it manageable and totally attainable. And then we can start shifting it around. And then before you know it, in a couple months, your life looks very different.
Mm-hmm. And I love how you talk about that sometimes we're doing these things, particularly obstacles that you face, of how creative you just have to be sometimes. Like, maybe you're not going to do it like you think you're doing it. You just need to come up with some creative solutions of how you are going to do it. I just love thinking about you roller skating.
Yes, exactly. I've definitely had a life. My whole life has just been figuring out how to make things work, you know, for me. And that's just been the reality of what I've had to do. But it's been great to have that experience, because it kind of always comes down to, how bad do you want it? That's where my mind goes. Mm. How bad do you want it? Because if you want something bad enough, you're going to get as creative as you need to make it work. I just think it really kind of is that simple, I think.
Oh, wow. That's so powerful. I mean, all of us can think about something that really believe that God wants us to do, or things that we are made for, and we try to limit ourselves. But we have to think, like, how badly do I want to please God? How badly do I want to obey him? How badly do I want this in my life? And just trying to find the courage and the, and maybe the creative ways that we need to be able to follow through with that. I love your, another quote you have in the book. It says, if something makes me uncomfortable, it's actually a signal that I do need to do it. Instead of making it comfortable, usually people throw up flags, right? Like, oh, that's, I'm low uncomfortable with that. I don't want to do that. But you actually think that that's what signals you that you should do it.
Yeah, I mean, of course our knee-jerk reaction is going to be that, you know, that's that, yeah, it's not easy, and it's kind of something you have to train, a muscle you have to train. And I think it, even when you train it, you're still going to have that initial reaction. But I've just known and learned and experienced in my life that every time I do that, every time I put myself outside my comfort zone, it's, you're going to grow tremendously from it. That's like the whole point. So, and that's like, that would be my biggest fear, is that I would never stop, or that I would stop growing, that I would stop, you know, learning or growing and moving forward. That's a really, I don't ever want to be, I will never be there. So, I have to challenge myself to do that. And also the amazing thing, and this is almost what pushes me more than just knowing that I'm going to grow, is that when you put yourself outside your comfort zone, people see that and they're super inspired by that. Mm-hmm. And that's really the heart of it, is that you're going to inspire somebody by pushing yourself outside your comfort zone, for sure.
Right. Yeah, that's what this whole podcast itself is about. It's just hearing people, how they've, you know, taken leaps of faith, and even when maybe it didn't make sense, or they didn't feel like they could do it, or finances didn't make sense. And I find it super inspiring to hear how other people, you know, did it in the face of fear or whatever challenges they have. So, yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So tell me about how faith has really played a part in your story.
Yeah, faith has been every part of my story from the beginning, you know, and it's just, as I've gotten older, it's, I've just grown so much closer and closer and closer to God and Jesus, and just understanding, you know, everything. I mean, when I understand him more, I understand myself more, I understand my purpose more, my nuances and my strengths and my weaknesses, and you know, challenging myself to be more vulnerable and to open up to people so that people can be moved, people can be changed, and that really surrendering, that has been a huge thing as a very recent in my life, just surrender, surrender, surrender. So like even more than I'm like, well, I think I've surrendered everything. It's like, probably not, keep going, you know? And, because it's like, it's the irony where we feel like we want to control everything, because that's how we can keep it under control and have disillusioned ourselves that that will bring us peace. But it's so the opposite, such an illusion. So when we can actually let go, that's when we actually get peace. And we're just fighting around in this circle that never ends. But if we can just stop and actually give up and surrender, I mean, like give up control and surrender, then that's, I think, the only time we find true peace and freedom. I mean, it's not easy. For sure. And it's something I think that you have to consciously want and do every single day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great point. It's just that it's a daily surrender, whatever God has for us.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So these days you are a professional aerialist, right?
Yes.
Tell me about what you're doing these days.
Yeah, so it's been an amazing wild ride, almost 9 years of being in the industry, and as an acrobat, an aerialist, and a speaker, and now an author. But I've been to 14 countries so far, which is, I mean, just that in and of itself is such a blessing. Travel has changed my life, it's just, it's everything. The gift of travel is everything, and I'm so thankful for that, and I want to go to, you know, 50 more countries. I mean, I love it, and I've learned and grown from that so much, and, you know, been able to do it, doing what I love and what God has called me to do. And so it started out just in the beginning, just doing acrobatic and aerial performing. So I was doing a trampoline act with my old partner, Nate, and he and I performed all over the world. We were on tour with Britney Spears. And when I say trampoline, this is a competitive 12 by 16 trampoline that you catch major air on, very technical, very, so it's incredible. And then an aerialist is, you know, like an aerialist is anything, any apparatus in the air. I perform specifically on the silk fabric. So it's the silk fabric that hangs from the ceiling, right, like Cirque du Soleil. People usually understand that. And I perform on either the silks or a silk hammock, which hammock it's just connected instead of two separate pieces. And I've been doing that all over the world, which is beautiful. And I love it so much. And speaking, you know, I thought speaking was going to be my retirement plan. I was like, I'm not old. I don't have gray hair. Like, I'm not speaking. I'm going to do that when I'm old. And God was like, no, you're speaking, girl. I'm like, no, I'm good. He's like, no, you're speaking. I'm like, ugh. So then I get flooded with just all these jobs and all these opportunities to speak. And I was like, well, and that was my surrender moment. And it was continually, it was like several years until I actually started really enjoying being a speaker and not just being angsty or maybe frustrated about it. And I had to surrender all the time and publicly surrender. I mean, on stage, it was not easy at all, actually. And I finally got to the point where I was like, wow, God, you are... My life is enriched and blessed by being a speaker. I mean, it was like unbelievable. And then everything shifted and I started really looking forward to and enjoying speaking. I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible, you know? And it was just amazing to see. And now I've, you know, spoken all over the world as well. So it's really cool.
Yeah. And I just think of all the people that you must inspire. I just love your attitude, your can-do attitude, and your willingness to share that with others.
Oh, thank you. It's always a work in progress, you know, always, always. And I'm excited to see what God has planned. I think there'll be a lot more books. I think I've felt for years since I started in the industry that I was going to be used in the beauty industry to really just kind of flip things upside down, you know, whether it's CoverGirl or L'Oreal, Dove, Shape, Self, Women's Health, things like that, or even, you know, Sports Illustrated going into the athletic world, fitness world, ESPN, things like that, where no one like me has ever been on those covers or in those roles of, you know, the beauty industry and the world of all that, where we really have an opportunity for major change and a major just shift and flip. And I think we're actually in a place where we're kind of ready for it now, having the plus size models being in different places now, just like blowing up and exploding. And I've felt that for years, for almost 9 years. And it's just kind of been a thing now where I'm like, I think this is going to be the time. And I'm really, really interested to see where God's going to take me, and potentially Dancing with the Stars as well. I think that, I don't know, it just keeps coming around in my life. And I'm like, well, if you want me to, I mean, that's, again, that's a moment where I would be really putting myself outside my comfort zone. Like, it was up to me, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do it. But I understand, like, okay, by me doing it, it's like what I said, by me doing it, and because it's a massive undertaking. I mean, you're working and rehearsing all the time. And it's not my thing. I'm not a dancer. You know what I mean? Like, I'm an aerialist. I'm an acrobat. Yeah, it's sort of kind of in the field. Not really. They're very different. And, you know, and I have to be extremely creative and have the right partner. And all these things really need to line up. So I'm like, but if I do it and put myself outside my comfort zone, the amount of people that it can inspire is just unbelievable. You know, it's millions. Mm-hmm. And so that's worth it. And that's just, yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, we'll see.
I love that mindset. It's like you, when you're weighing about what you should do, you're thinking about the impact of others. That's just revolutionary. It's so good.
Well, it has to be. I want to make sure that everything I do always is of the right mindset, because I don't want it to go, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole where, because if I'm not doing it for that reason, then what am I doing it for? It really, like,
well,
there's
I think
no point.
So many people, when they're thinking about whether to do something, it's like, well, is this going to be financially good for me? Is this going to put me in the right place? Is this going to further my life? You know, just very much sort of internal, selfish sort of reasons. Is this good for my family? You know, et cetera. It's not like, I think I should, because I think I could really help some people. Like, I don't think that's a normal thing.
Oh, I don't think anyone's ever said that, or maybe I've not consciously thought of it. That's so interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's incredible that you just naturally have that mindset. I don't think that's something that everybody, you know, goes into these things as they feel like God's calling them these things. They're like, well, I think I should because it's worth it for somebody else to be encouraged. So I think that's a gift that you have.
Thank you. I think it is, you know, now that you put it that way, I'm like, well, yeah, I guess it is just the way God, you know, it's purposeful. I mean, you know, he's a purposeful God. I'm like, it's all for a reason. You know, everything I desire, everything I think, it's not for nothing. And I'm realizing that even more and more and more. It's just like, wow, yep, that's for a reason. It's all for a reason. And I'm like, that's incredible. So that's the same. That would be the same. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, Jen, thanks so much for being on today. How can people maybe come see you, connect with you, get your book, all of that good stuff?
Yeah, definitely. The easiest way, I mean, my website is jenbricker.com. Social media is probably more on the day-to-day. Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, all at Jen Bricker. And Twitter would be at Jen Bricker with the number one behind it.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I hope people follow you and just get so inspired, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I would love to watch you on Dancing with the Stars, and I would love to come see you someday. If you get around me, that'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. My schedule is always changing, so it's I always keep it up to date on everything on my social media. So, in 2 days' notice, I could be halfway around the world, so who knows?
Oh, my goodness. All right, we'll check in with you.
All righty.
All right. Thanks so much, Jen.
Thank you.
Guys, isn't her story so incredible? I am just so inspired by it. Just even her outlook on life, and just understanding that God made her uniquely, and what some might see as a disability, she sees as an advantage that God is using just for his purposes. And I love how she looks at whatever she is facing her. There's a couple different things, angles that she takes. First is her mindset. She really changes her mindset. She doesn't even say she can or she can't. She just says, I will do this. So first thing I think we can take is that sometimes we need to change our mindset on whatever we are in front of that we are going to do. Second is she counts the cost. She asks, how bad do you want it? I think especially as people of faith, we have to ask ourselves, how badly do we want to spread the gospel? How badly do we want to fulfill our purposes on this earth? How badly do you want it? Also, she doesn't let fear get in the way. She actually runs toward it. She does it, you know, she does it afraid. She sees that flag and says, that's something I've learned that it's worth doing when I feel that fear at the beginning. And finally, she gets creative. You know, life has forced her to be creative to get things done and really encourages us to do the same. You know, if we've determined that we will do it and it's worth it, and we might just have to get creative on how it gets done. You know, maybe we need to get creative on finances or pulling help in that we weren't expecting to, or maybe doing it in a little bit different way than we had planned. But we can do the things that God has called us to do. Man, I am so inspired by Jen, and I hope it's been the same for you. So guys, don't forget to share this on your favorite social media channel. Love to get these stories out there. I know people will be so encouraged. Thanks too to several folks who have left iTunes reviews recently. It's so appreciated to help get the word out about it as well. And also, I wanted to let you know that I have a new hoodie and t-shirt design. It says covered on it and has a feather underneath that is, of course, inspired by Psalm 91:4. He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. And you can check that out at amyjbennett.com/shop. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening this week, and we will see you next week on Feathers.